Hey there, this is Widow, and this podcast is for adults only.
So we have a mutual friend, Coco. And I'm always excited when someone I like, a friend of mine, suggests someone or knows someone who they think would be good on the show, because I know, like, Coco does not really suffer fools. Then again, sometimes I'm like, what if I'm the one exception to this rule, you know? Wait, if Coco's friends with me, then she must suffer one at least, you know? But we were talking about you and talking about your event space, and I thought this would be a really great conversation for numerous reasons. But before we talk about the event space and everything, I'm curious about how you discovered kink, how you started exploring kink, and what that was like for you. Are you from, no, you're in New York.
Yes.
As are all the cool kids. And were you always in New York, or?
Yeah, I'm born and raised a native New Yorker, though my family is of Haitian descent. But yes, I've always been here, and most of my family is also here in New York. And I got into kink a bit later in life than I guess most folks. I came to it through reading. I am a huge reader and things like that. And so I also really enjoy romance. And there was a huge period of time, and there still is, where there's a lot of like books about like alpha males and all this sort of stuff. And so I just was curious about, well, there must be books where there are dominant women in them. It just sort of occurred to me like, wow, there's so many of these books with dominant men. There has to be some folks that are writing about dominant women. And I just wanted to kind of just see what that would be like. And I was in a reading group, and somebody suggested a few books for me to read. There's some pretty old ones now. It's Natural Law is one that was by, I can't remember the author. It'll come to me. But she has written quite a few books, actually, that have female doms. And so I read that. I enjoyed it. Then I found some blogs where it was lifestyle doms talking about their journey. And one of the blogs mentioned FetLife. And so that's how I found FetLife. And then I went to the Harlem Munch. That was my first munch. And then from there, I just started meeting people and going to things and stuff like that. So I think that what maybe made me want to read that book about female dominance is because even in vanilla relationships, I have always been the one that has been leading the relationship and in charge in some way. And so I just felt like, I wonder if this exists as a thing, you know, if there's people that actually are like, oh, wow, this is who I am looking for, as opposed to, you know, finding a woman that is more traditional. So, yeah. That's sort of what got me going.
Okay, I've got a lot of questions there. So you're reading these books first with more, you know, male dominant focused. Was there like a flicker of a light bulb, or like, this is the thing, but it's not my thing? I know early on, like when I would see like a guy tying up a woman or something like that, or something, you know, early in my exploration, I was like, this is not right for me, but I can see that there's a hint of something there. Like, did you have that feeling, or were you like, but at the same time, I knew it was wrong. You know, it felt off, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think I would say that. Yeah. I think that I enjoyed the books that I was reading with the male doms, but I felt like I didn't love it. I liked the idea of what was going on, but felt a bit like, this is really stupid. It wasn't quite right, but it was like, right. Yeah, these are interesting. And so I just was like, I wonder what it would look like if it was just a different, you know, a different version of this, you know, and things right. like that. Yeah. And so I finally remembered the author's name too. It was Joey W. Hill. I don't know if she writes anymore, but.
Well, I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of sales of the books, yeah, after this episode goes out, and then you'll get a cut if they, yeah, you know. So you start reading those books, and then obviously then it clicked for you in some way, right? How long of a time are we talking? By the way, I've been to the Harlem Munch. If there was a I wish that would have been my first munch. I used to live in East Harlem, and yeah, that was by far friendlier than the first munch I went to.
Okay.
The first one I went to was like Lori. No, it was in the Midwest, and it was just really, really uncomfortable and bad. I remember being jealous of people going to their first munch at the Harlem Munch because I'm like, man, you've got it so much easier. People are so much friendlier.
Yeah.
So how long are we talking between you read the first more femdom focused books to your first munch? Was your munch like, or I should say, when you go on FetLife? Mm-hmm. What kind of a time frame are we looking at there?
Yeah, I mean, it might have been within a week, I would say. I mean, a very very short timeline. I really started voraciously reading. So it was like I read the books, then I found the blogs, and all within a week. I was reading a lot of blogs and then found somebody who, as I said, mentioned it. And so checked it out and then wanted to get to a munch where it was like in reading the blogs that was also mentioned, like, oh, munch is an easy way to, you know, start to explore. So that was what I wanted to do. So yeah, probably within a week or two, right? I don't know when the Harlem Munch was, you know, but it was like, yeah, I mean, very short period of time. And I was like, yeah.
So, and FetLife was before Harlem Munch or after?
Before. Yeah. That's how I found the Harlem Munch.
Oh,
like getting onto FetLife is where I found the Harlem Munch and was like, all right, let me go to that. And I am really glad it was my first munch. It was great. It was really lovely.
Extremely, very friendly. And I think that's the big key. And I got very lucky in that I met the right people.
Right.
Because obviously there's the wrong people to meet in just in anything, right?
Yeah.
Whether you work, regardless of where you work or what you're, whatever. And I was lucky, I think, that I happened to meet the right people who took me under their wing, who, you know, Coco was one of the first people I met. And I can't imagine who introduced me to her friend. If Coco wasn't, like, there's an alternate universe where I don't meet Coco, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I meet someone else who's like, who maybe completely turns me off for the scene entirely, who's not friendly, right? Who's not welcoming. And that's a completely different reality that is like, I don't even want to think about it. But going on FetLife, was there anything that like took you aback at all? Because I know some people who they will go on FetLife and they will see some of the discussions and the conversations. They'll be like, oh, this is not for me. You know, like it's a little more extreme than what I'm looking for or whatever. As opposed to like maybe someone who first discovers it in books and maybe porn. And then they see, you know, because you can see some pretty extreme stuff on FetLife, right?
Yeah.
What was that like? Was that for you? Was it like, aha, there are other people, or like, oh, okay, some of this is a bit much for me. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I think that because I'm an in-person sort of person, I am not an online person. So I'm not interested in chatting with people online or doing a whole lot online. So when I went on to FetLife, first of all, I friended. So I had messaged one of the women that was blogging at the time. And so I got her, you know, we chatted very briefly and I got her FetLife name. And so she was my first friend on FetLife. And I think that she also had mentioned to me, like, just look for events kind of thing. So actually when I went on there, I did not go to join any discussion groups or anything. I just went and found a munch and so that I could like meet actual people in real life. So thankfully I did not, and still don't really use FetLife for anything besides events. And I mean, I have a group on there and have joined groups now, but primarily I am there just to actually have events and meet people in real life. So I haven't had the horrible side of FetLife, let's say, you know, that some people encounter. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is sort of a... No, I know people who have just, I recently met someone who just started exploring they started sort of in a progression of like erotica first, then dating apps.
Okay.
You know, not going to in-person events because of their negative experience on dating apps and on FetLife or whatever, right? Like they thought that the events were going to be an exact replication of, which, by the way, I mean, not to say that all events are great, because obviously, you know, there are creeps everywhere, right?
Yes.
And we'll talk about like your events as well, just to kind of, I'm sure there's a reason why you wanted to make your own space. For her, like events were, I mean, or I should say, her experiences online was a deterrent to her exploring because of, it was just such a negative experience, right?
Yeah.
So you start going to more events afterwards, I'm assuming, outside of the Harlem Bunch.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I started to go to more events, and I definitely did some of the early mistakes that folks make, that I think it seems everybody has the experience of, like, I met somebody, I had posted an ad on FetLife as well about, like, oh, looking to find a partner to do power exchange with. I always was primarily into power exchange, so that's what I started with anyway. I met somebody and went on a first date with them to the Harlem Bunch. I went with them the second time I went to the Harlem, the first time I went by myself, but when I went again, I brought them so that I could meet them in person and things like that. And then, you know, it was exactly the situation where our kinks did not at all align, but I was still new and exploring. So I had no idea like what questions to ask and how to know this. And so it's like, I had, you know, like a bad experience with this first person that I tried to enter a dynamic with, because it was like, what, you know, he was looking for was more like blackmail and, you know, humiliation and things that, I mean, just not at all were what I'm looking for. I think that he also was only mostly new pro-doms, and so sort of was treating it as such, like, oh, what, you know, what can I pay for? Just a very weird situation. And because I was still new, it's like, yeah, I definitely went on more dates with this person than needed to do, you know, so I definitely encountered that when trying to date in the lifestyle. But when it comes to just like, oh, just going to events to like meet friends, which is what my focus is when I go to events, that worked out very well, because it was just like, yeah, I met such friendly people who then told me about another event or a party they were going to. And then I went with them to something, you know, so that was good. But I definitely encountered the sort of early, the newbie mistakes of like, yeah, trying to connect with somebody when it's very clear that like your kinks don't align at all, and there should have been no reason for us to have been dating, you know.
Like from your perspective, like what other, like if you were talking to either your newbie self or just someone else who's just starting, like, yeah, what are the things that you can, the tips, what you wish you had known that you know now?
I think I would tell somebody and myself as well to remember that the purpose of what I was looking for being a female dominant was to be in charge and to be aware of the many people who will say that they're submissive but actually are looking to just get their needs met and aren't actually there for you at all. And I think that because until you get maybe used to the fact that like, oh, this is what it looks like to be in charge, it can be easy as a woman, especially because of how you normally grow up or, you know, like, and are socialized, it can be easy to struggle with like, oh, suddenly I'm in charge of a relationship, so this is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm making, you know, all the decisions are mine and stuff like that. So it can be easy to then kind of feel like, oh, like maybe I need to, am I being too dominant? Maybe I need to compromise. Should I pull back? Am I being too much? Like, so these sort of doubts can happen, and it can be easy in the beginning when you're meeting people that are just looking for a kink dispenser or, you know, looking to just have you blackmail them and do things that make no sense for you, but it feels like, oh, like maybe this is, I'm just like looking to, there's a mixture of, I just want to explore different things, so let's see what happens. And then also being like, well, I guess, you know, I need to be compromising and kind and, you know, I mean, just like the sort of usual stuff that you would do in a vanilla relationship where you're trying to be equal and kind and caring and listen to the person's needs, which is not like to say that you as a female dominant won't want to do that later, but there's sort of like a clear idea of what you're looking for so that you can be like, well, this is actually what I'm fully looking for. And I won't let myself get swayed into some other things that have nothing to do with me, you know? So right. I think it's mostly identifying when somebody's actually there as a submissive and really there to submit, and when somebody is really just there because they know that you're new and they know that it will be easy to be like, oh, you should try this. What about that? You know, and that happens a lot. That happened a lot for me. People would be attracted to me because I'm new and then would want to, like, you know, have me do something or try something just as like, oh, you should try this and that. But it's really just, this is what they're there for. They're here to get spanked or to do whatever or other things that they're there for. And so that can happen a lot, I find, to new DOMs, especially femme presenting. And then I also find that because I didn't yet know the questions to ask, it was very easy for me to think that we were in alignment or think that, you know, oh, this could work. And then later to discover, like, no, this person is maybe just in the bedroom submissive, or this person is primarily there for the physicality of kink as opposed to the mental aspects. Like, I didn't realize that for me, power exchange is a very mental thing. And so, you know, there was a lot that I wasn't aware of. And so I think maybe just knowing what you are looking for would be a huge help if you come in and are, like, very clear on what you're looking for. And then also being aware of the fact that so many men, particularly male subs, to be honest, will be like, yes, I'm submissive, but they are mostly bottoms or mostly just looking for somebody to do some porn with, kind of thing, you know. So I don't think I realized that that would be such a big thing.
It is a tricky... So I'm not a fan of gatekeeping, right? Mm-hmm. However, that being said, it is a difficult thing. Like I didn't know things about myself when I was first starting, right? Yeah. Because I don't have like a specific fetish, right? Something that like is like, I'm almost jealous of the people who have like, they have their thing and that's, yeah. You know, whatever. Whereas for me, it's like, it very much depends on the person and what gets them off and, you know, all this other stuff, which is, it's a double-edged sword because on one hand, it's that whole, that terrible thing of like, what do you want to do? You know, where some people's like, just stop being wishy-washy and ask for what you want. And like, well, I don't know what I want unless you say, you know, until I know what you want. But there are, we're talking about male submissives. We'll talk about male submissives. There are male submissives that, because they think that they see in porn or whatever that this is what a male submissive is.
Yeah.
That they don't have, you know, they may not know, to call themselves a bottom instead of submissive, right? They don't, you know. Also, maybe they think that's what submission is, right? They think that submission is just the act of being spanked or whatever, right? And so I find it's also difficult, especially like if you're talking to someone who maybe is just like, especially, this is very true, especially with the switch women I know, that they rarely play with submissive guys because they don't usually meet submissive guys. They meet bottoms who just want their, you know, and trying to, as a submissive guy, trying to explain the difference between a bottom and a submissive, to try to say like, no, look, I know you've had negative experiences in the past. Because it's also, obviously I have a vested interest in them now knowing the difference. But you said you have questions, you know what questions to ask. What are those questions that you ask in those situations to kind of identify? Because there's nothing wrong with being a bottom, right?
Totally.
There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is people speaking the same language but meaning different things by it. So what are the questions you ask to filter?
Now I will ask, like, what does submission look like for you? That is one that really helps a lot. I ask about what kinds of service have you done, and I specify non-sexual service as well. What kinds of non-sexual service have you performed? I ask if they volunteer, you know, in whether the lifestyle or just in a general sense, do you enjoy volunteering? What about volunteering do you like? Because I do like people that serve. So those are things that I ask. I also ask, like, what does power exchange mean to you? What does it look like for you? And so, I definitely have learned to ask that particular, like, what does it look like kind of question, because it helps to be like, yeah, let me get what your definition actually looks like, so that I can make sure that we are using the same word to mean the same thing, because of, again, right. The fact that people definitely have different meanings for these terms. And so it can be totally something different. So that in particular has helped me a lot, asking that kind of like, all right, what does it look like? And asking people to define things more. And then I have also sort of, asked about when you serve, what do you find pleasurable about it? So it's like, I'm looking to see if what they love about serving is the fact that there's like a lot of reward and punishment, and, they're like, going to be spanked if they don't do the right thing, or if it's that they are just pleased to be doing a very good job and want to, just that they're doing a good job and being maybe verbally recognized is what makes them feel good and feel like they have really made your life easier. So things like that are some questions. My best scene almost was one of the best scenes I've had is someone who came to my event space and defrosted my freezer and just, gave me some wine. And I was sort of sitting and working upstairs. It's two floors. I was working upstairs and they were downstairs defrosting the freezer and just working hard and doing a good job. And yeah, it was really wonderful. They would come every once in a while to like top off my wine. And I felt like, yeah, this is a delight. So, yeah.
So how do you find, like, what is, so you've asked the questions, what are the answers for you that are like the ideal answers for those questions?
Yeah, I mean, definitely someone who enjoys doing non-sexual service. So, if they have things that they have done and can answer with things that they've done is great. Somebody who volunteers is somebody, that is ideal. And someone who also says that like what they get out of service is making their dominant's life easier, that they just enjoy doing a job well done. Someone who is, when I say like, what does submission look like for you? Someone who sort of talks about wanting to sort of be efficient. I usually will ask for archetypes. So if somebody has like a butler archetype or a personal assistant archetype or something like that. So I usually will give a few like examples, and those are my favorite, the butler or personal assistant and things like that, because I feel like, yeah, these are people that like to do a good job or are want to be efficient and things like that. I always look to like Hannah the Scribe is one person that I find to be an ideal sort of, service person. And I will also say I have found that I'm pansexual, so I play with all genders. And I have found that the female submissives that I have had relationships with and played with have been the best, really, really good. So I don't know if it's just that, they're more detail oriented, or I don't know, but really excellent. So
it's so funny because I have, because I'm tall, I would get approached by a lot of female submissives. Yeah. So I have a lot of female submissive friends, right? They were very disappointed when we first met. They're like, oh, okay. In my experience, now keep in mind, this is just, a very small sample. A lot of my submissive female friends would ask about service when they would ask me about, like, they would say, okay, well, what play did you do or whatever? And I would say like, well, there wasn't any play, maybe I'd be disappointed there wasn't any play, but I still enjoyed the service aspect of it or whatever. And they were like, wow, like what? So wait, so why are you doing this again? Because they're used to, in their experience, having someone want to play with them a lot, right? Or having the options to play a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so for them, they were like, why are you doing this exactly? I don't understand. Where's the play? I don't understand. Where's, you didn't orgasm at all? Wait, what? It's amazing you say that, because I almost all of my submissive female friends would be like, fuck, I'm not going to clean someone. I'm not going to defrost someone's freezer unless I'm, I don't know, what am I, do I have a vibrator on, or like what? What's the catch? You know.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating you say that, because almost all my submissive female friends would like, because they like, again, for them they like to be the sex object, you know, or yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So that's interesting for you to say. When you come upon a newbie, let's say it's a new submissive who does not know the archetypes or anything like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe all they know is porn or whatever. So you don't know, they don't know if they're a bottom or they are submissive or anything like that. Like, is that something that you, are you like, okay, well, come back when you have learned more about yourself, or do you kind of help point them in the right direction? Or how does that usually work for you?
I think, yeah, I certainly engage with newbies in terms of like, I'll have them come to events and things like that, and or suggest events to them. But I usually don't play or do any, I'm looking to get in a dynamic with a newbie unless they read a lot. If somebody reads a lot, as a reader myself, obviously that would be appealing to me. So if they've read any books, not just erotica, or I may suggest a book to them. I often would suggest Question and Answers by Raven Caldera and Joshua Tenpenny. So usually I'll give them a book to read. And if they actually do the reading, then I will engage more. Or I may just ask them about their vanilla life, I guess, too. Like, just because that's why I also ask that volunteer question. You know, there's plenty of things that they may do in their vanilla world that lends itself to like, oh, this is why I enjoy being in this lifestyle, period. So I will usually try to see about those kind of things. Like, you know, are they in some way educating themselves is what I mostly want to know. So no, I certainly would never play with a newbie that was not educating themselves, has never been to anything, hasn't read anything, isn't looking to go to an event. I mean, yeah. And I've encountered that. And that's just like, yeah, this person isn't for me. But if they have gone to something or have read a book or want to read books, I mean, I have a DS book club. And so if they've gone on to that and have like read a few of the books there or something that shows like, yeah, they're willing to do their part in this lifestyle, then I'm open. So.
Your DS book club, is it mostly fiction, nonfiction, both, or?
It's a mix. Yeah, it's a mix. It's mostly nonfiction because it can be hard to find good fiction that, you know, showcases DS. But we have read like a pretty cool graphic novel that was Yes, Roya, and that was fun. And we've read some other like classic fictions, you know. But yeah, it's primarily nonfiction that just, yeah, focuses on power exchange.
You were talking about the different kind of archetypes earlier.
Yes.
And now I'm kind of questioning my own, because I've always, whenever someone, I've tried to explain the nature of, we have a DS relationship in and out of the bedroom. And I've the easiest explanation I've come across is to say it's like a knight to his queen type of situation.
Right.
One, because it's sort of like, well, one, she's on a pedestal in that instance. But also I wonder if it's my own like self-conscious toxic masculinity or something like that, then a knight, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I telling that to myself because saying butler feels less valuable or something? I don't know.
I'm
talking about the fictionalized idea of a knight, not the reality. Right. Right. But yeah, it makes me question, like, because I mean, it's definitely aspects of a butler, because I'm always filling up water, or, you know, doing, and I do chores around the house or whatever. But I'm really starting to question if that is the right analogy or not. But it also sounds sexier to say that than butler, I think.
Yeah.
Like if I'm talking to someone
who's
like curious about it, and if I say butler, they're like, that does not sound fun at all, you know?
Right, right. I definitely also use the knight archetype as well. Because I guess that archetype, I've never thought of it where how it might connect with any sort of toxic masculinity. That's a very interesting thought. But for me, I feel that it makes sense because there's a sense of pride in what the person is doing, a sense of doing it, you know, they feel a sense of duty, a sense of loyalty. And so those are like the things that are great qualities that I'm also looking for. So I find that, yes, that also helps people to be like, okay, I see what you're saying if I say that, you know?
Yeah. It's also a little, there's a little more agency to the night, I guess you could say too, yeah. Because like, because there's a lot of stuff I do where I that she has no idea that I've done. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because if I'm doing it right, she will never know that there was this problem. Right.
Right.
Or whatever. Right. Even though I do secretarial work and I do all this other stuff, like it does come up every now and again where I'll say like, you have no idea the things I've hidden from you. You know, I'm so much better than you think I am. You know, I could keep a list. Here's all the things you avoided because of, you know. She's like, okay, you just want a pat on the head? I'll give you a pat on the head. Yes, I just want to give me a goddamn pat on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a need for value there. That's interesting. So the DS Book Club, is it virtual, in person?
It used to be in person. And then with the pandemic, it went virtual. And now it has stayed virtual. I haven't yet brought it back to in person because when it was during the pandemic, there was a lot of people that came from like Canada and France and all these other places. And it was like, oh, this is nice. So I have left it virtual. And I mean, it's definitely fizzled out a little bit in that I have been doing so many other events that people are coming to and things like that, that usually when I do the DS Book Club, it's now it's maybe once a quarter, you know, mm-hmm. And it's a little less people attending. And so I just was like, yeah, maybe people are wanting to get back in person. And so it's no longer as, you know, interesting.
So let's talk about your event space. You what was the genesis of you going like, I think something's needed here that's not being fulfilled that I can take over. I can do. How did this idea come about? Like, were you at an event that was really disappointing in you, or right. What was the, or many events that were really disappointing? how did it happen?
I think. Because I wanted to focus on events that are very, are femdom specific, I think that was my biggest thing. I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of events that are happening in the lifestyle, but it's rare to find femdom specific munches or, you know, things besides a play party where you can sort of interact with each other in that lifestyle. And also rare to find ones that aren't pro heavy. And so it's, you know, I just wanted to find a way for people that are into the femdom world to be able to like, just connect as human beings. And it doesn't have to be that like, oh, I have to meet this person at a play party. And therefore there is this hope of play or expectation of play or whatever of play. Instead, it's like, you know, you can come to a game night and a kink and draw and just, you know, just relax and have a good time and just chat. There is no expectation of anything. But also, you know, that like everybody in the room is looking for something femdom related, because I definitely have gone to a lot of munches and I don't usually, yeah, I just don't find a lot of male submissives. I usually don't find a lot of even female submissives that are looking for a femdom, most of the doms in the room were male doms, you know, so it just felt like, yeah, I was going to munches, but it was like, well, I'm not going to find my people in these munches because it just seems like it leans heavily male dom. And so I was like, well, let me try to do something and make it clear that it's like, oh, this is a femdom game night, so that, you know, okay, I'm going to like meet my people, you know?
So you wanted a place that had a lower percentage of utilikilts.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
My wife will be like, okay, let's count how many utilikilts are. I see one. I see that. Yeah. Damn it. I'm sure they're useful. I don't know. I don't want to get sued by the utilikilt lobby. I know they're very right. powerful.
Yes, exactly.
I don't want to. I'm not assuming anything. So you had the idea for this. How do you go about doing it? I mean, that seems pretty, that seems overwhelming to me about like, how do you find a space? How do you plan a space? How do you do this?
Yeah. I started with, finding, like I did something at Madame X, that was a singles event and some game nights. And I just definitely would find different places in New York where it was like, oh, can I use this room and stuff like that. You know, I just started the basic way. And I think because, I mean, I guess I've just always been like, if somebody who, if I don't see it happening, I feel like, well, I'll just do it myself. So it didn't feel daunting. It was just sort of like, well, I mean, let me just see what happens and just do it myself. And so I also used at one point Goddess Loft, which I don't think is around anymore, but I used Goddess Loft as a space to do some events. And so, yeah, I just would find where I could host the events. And that was before I got my space. And my space is a vanilla event space. So it's not, you know, particularly kinky. But when I found that space, then I was like, oh, great, I can start to do stuff there. You know, like the DS Book Club, I used to meet at the Pain Quotidien and stuff like one, you know, just any cafe in the city. And so it really wasn't like I was doing anything particular. I just found any location that would allow me to do whatever the event was.
That's pretty, maybe that's just, it's just me or something like that, but having your own event space alone, or just deciding, hey, I want to organize an event space for this specific thing, seems like there's so many small details that go into that I can't imagine. I mean, I suppose it helps if you know people who can help you along the way, right?
Yes.
So what was the reception like when you started doing it? I'm sure that a lot of people really appreciative of it.
People.
I mean, definitely. I know. There've been a couple times. I remember a couple weeks ago, I was like, "Oh, this is a there's a." I mean, because I haven't been to your space or any of your events yet. I messaged Coco. I was like, "Hey, are you going to be going to this? I'm thinking of going." And she's like, "It's sold out. Sorry." I was like, "Well, that's a good thing." It was bad for me at the time, but it's a good thing, right? That it's, yeah. I mean, that they're selling out. That's a good sign.
I think that people were very receptive. And I also enjoyed doing like unique sort of munches. Like one of the first ones that I did was also like, we went to a toy shop. I think it was Babeland. And, you know, walked around and then went to grab food afterwards, or I've done like a, you know, roller skating, you know, so, I enjoyed just doing, very random things as well that just allowed people to be like, oh, sure. This is fun. But yeah. And so now, yes, definitely it's, started going more and more, and people are actually, you know, yes, coming and selling out events and stuff like that, which is, yes, lovely.
So you also have game nights?
Yes.
What games are we, like, we're talking Monopoly, we're talking board games, basically?
Yes. Yeah, it's board games. And so it'll be Uno and Jenga, What Do You Meme? And then people will bring their own games, of course. And so that's usually what it'll be. I've also done it where it's been like a singles game night, so that it was all single folks that were into femdom and could meet each other. And then I've also done where it was like a CDNS game night, so that it was like there were some games that you could play, but also that those were a bit more kinky games. And so, you know, or we just infused kink into the regular games. You know, if you lost, you got spanked or whatever, you know.
Right. Well, the reason why I bring it up is because as someone, let's say for the sake of argument, someone is married to a dominant woman. Sake of argument, my wife. I'm talking about my wife. Who's very competitive when it comes to board games.
Yeah.
Right? How do you have to make an announcement at the beginning of the night? Folks, this is just for fun only.
Yeah.
Please, no wagering. This is for whatever. Like,
yeah.
I almost all of my close friends who are also dumb women, who are also competitive, do you notice the dynamic that's going on in these game nights? How do I put this in the nicest way?
Yeah.
is there a lot of competition is what I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, there definitely is. There definitely is. Nobody has flipped a table or anything like that as yet. So it's been all right. But yeah, no, definitely people are competitive. But then also, there's also a lot of folks where they don't care at all. They're barely paying attention. It's mostly that they're there to chat, you know, so sure, they're hardly making any effort to do any, you know, any kind of winning. But yeah, it's definitely a mixture. It's definitely a mixture of people.
And can you tell like if you only knew how they were playing, if you could only observe how they were playing, can you ID the subs from the DOMs? And can you, I've played, we play Ticket to Ride every now and again. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I made the mistake of winning like three games in a row or something like that. And I didn't even realize I'd won three in a row. It was very rare that I win three in a row anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And I would never like let her win because then I know she would not be happy with that. But I also know that there are repercussions for winning too often. That's, I'm just curious if you're observing, you're like, oh, dom, top, bottom, sub, are you, is it easy to tell?
Sometimes it is. Yes. Cause definitely, with Uno, sometimes if somebody skips a dom, they might be like, oh, I'm sorry. And like apologize because they put the skip card down, you know? So yeah, sometimes you can definitely see that like, oh, they're trying to be like, oh, sorry. So
someone who puts the skip card down and goes, aha, aha, you know, you can probably tell.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
It sounds very fun. It sounds like, I mean, so how often are you having events there?
Well, I have been, usually I'll have the kink events maybe like four or five times a month of late. That's what I've been doing. Cause I have a lot of ideas and I want to do a lot of different things. So it's like hard for me to be patient and I want to try to get all the things out, you know, at the same time. So yeah, usually but I try to keep myself from going beyond five in a month, so that I'm not overwhelmed. And obviously because there's also vanilla events that are happening, people rent the space and all that kind of stuff too. But yeah, usually I try to do 4 to 5 every month if I can.
I mean, that's a lot.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, because I mean, I know people who've run events before and it's easy to get burnout in that situation, especially because it's not always, I mean, in many instances, it's a thankless job in many instances, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people who go to like lifestyle events, like they're just events in general, they don't realize what goes into it, you know? How do you deal with, I guess the phrase is like, can you just tell when you see people enjoying themselves? Is that sort of like the, okay, this is what you just enjoy the fact that you're doing it. And it's a type of service almost in some aspects, right?
Yeah.
I guess I'm asking as someone who goes to events, like what is a good way to make sure that you feel appreciated, other than like, hey, help you clean up after or something like that. Like what is, as an event organizer, what is the good behavior of an event attendee? What is it?
Yeah.
What makes you walking away from it smiling, knowing that it was, you know,
I think that for me, it's, well, I love to create community and form community and be part of community and all that. So that's like sort of my, at my core. So I find a lot of joy when the events are happening and people are clearly having a good time and they're chatting and meeting each other. I love to discover afterwards that like, oh, people started dating from the, a speed dating event or a game night. And they started, you know, they went on a few dates and stuff, you know, I mean that, so that makes me just happy. And I definitely love when people help me set up or clean up and all that, of course. But I think another thing is maybe just that they participate in the event, like that they, you know, maybe if I'm like, oh, I'm trying to think of a game that we can play, like sometimes at the CDNS, I may try to find games so that we can have some, which is a non-gendered CFNM. So, I just try to find games that we can do that could be fun. And it's great if somebody's like, oh, you know what? I've played this game before, I can lead it. And so, you know, they just sort of help to participate and make the night fun. And they bring their ideas and they bring their energy and they bring their joy. And then maybe they also give me some ideas for other things. Like, oh, hey, I can help you to put together a blah, blah, blah munch if you'd like. I know how to do X and I can help you, you know? So yeah, just to see them participating in the lifestyle, in the community, sorry, that we're building, and that they also bring their ideas and energy and things like that, you know?
How do you, I'm sure this will be helpful for other people who are maybe thinking of or are running their own events elsewhere in the world. How do you filter, or maybe filter isn't the right word. If someone shows up to your event expecting the wrong thing, or maybe comes in. So I'm thinking of, something that I didn't realize with the thing until I started dating my wife is that going to an event and like a submissive or a bottom or a guy would just walk right up to her in the middle of a conversation and say, can I worship your feet or whatever? Like, right. Is it completely, how do you set a tone of like, hey, this is expected behavior. This is, you know, I mean, maybe you've had an issue where someone showed up expecting one thing and it was something else. Like,
right.
How do you handle that? Or how do you, or is it just you set the right tone so that they show up and they might go, oh, this is not that type of event, or.
Yeah. I think it seems, thankfully so far, to be that because I do a lot of munches, I sort of lean more munch heavy than play heavy. There usually folks are coming to a game night and they know, okay, it's board games. And I put that on the thing. Like, this is not a BDSM thing, it's a board games. And so people will come and just will be normal and we'll meet and just chat. I also put that in the description, like, you know, we're here to just meet as normal people and things like that. So you, or the kink and draw, they just come to draw. And so a lot of times it seems that I haven't had a problem where people are coming up and being, you know, random at a game night. They're usually there and really actually looking to play games. And then they might have some conversation. And then many times, because they have come to many munches, then when I do have a play party, which is a little more rare, but when they come to a play party, they already sort of have an idea of like what the vibe of the space is or something. And so, and I have a lot of people that are regulars, so have come to many things, and that helps also to balance things out. And so I do get some new people. There was one person that maybe had made some inappropriate comments that were like, you know, racially insensitive and things like that. And so, but that's happened once and I had to speak to them. But usually it's like, yeah, even if people come because of the regulars that are there, they might help to also set the tone and help to, you know what I mean? Like manage the situation, even that situation, they actually helped to manage it and then spoke to me about it afterwards, you know? So I think it's maybe the general vibe of the community has already given a little bit of foundation so that I don't, when people come, they know it's like, oh, it's going to be a small, intimate space, intimate party. You know, it's like coming to a friend's place and you're just going to do some fun play and relax. And, you know, so that's sort of the vibe.
You mentioned clothed dominant, nude submissive.
Yeah.
I know, I have a couple male submissive friends who are like, that's their thing, right? Like they really enjoy that. And in fact, it's almost from the level of, because I've heard dominant friends talk about those events as well.
Yeah.
It seems like just based on my conversations with both sides that the enthusiasm seems to be much higher on the male submissive side in my experience than it is on the like the feeling of being exposed, objectified, etc.
Right.
As opposed to the dominants I know who enjoy it, they're like, yeah, it's a thing. It is whatever, because like they can see naked people, whatever. What is the appeal for you? Is it a vulnerability? Is it like what does it do for you or the other people who go, other dominants that go?
Yeah, I think it is the. The differentiation of power, the clear, you know, differentiation there. And I think that it's also the, like you said, the vulnerability. It's also just that it's something so unique that, you know, it's not often that you get to be in a space where it's like, oh, some people are dressed, some people are not. And there's like a purpose, there's a reason for all of that happening, you know? So I think that it's also just a fun thing to be able to do that you don't often get to do. I've been to nude beaches, which are also wonderful, but it's like, yeah, there everybody's naked. But here it's like, you know, just fun to do this very different, unique, specific thing that's happening. And it feels, yeah, I definitely have met a lot of doms who enjoy it as well. And because my events are very queer centered also, it's nice to be able to have female non-binary trans subs that come and also get to like enjoy this kink. I feel like I don't often get to see that happening with that. I mean, usually it is CFNM, so it's specifically, you know, nude male. So, you know, it's right. Nice to just have different sort of vibe.
I imagine too, one thing that the reason why a lot of these guys that I know who are really enjoy it is they're confident that they're going to be safe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the fact that you have a space that is comforting for regardless of gender probably is the reason why you don't see it very often, right? That it's pretty unique, you know?
So
that's got to feel good knowing that you've made a space that everyone feels comfortable and safe at.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is sort of also the point of even the Vanilla Space. It's called New Women's Space, and it's very mission driven, and it's for queer folks and women to be able to come together and host events and meet like-minded people. So in a, you know, my kink events are very similar in that regard as well. Like, yeah, I want it to be a safe space. I want people to feel comfortable. I want people to feel like they're not being swallowed up or, you know, overwhelmed, that they can actually like make real connections. So it is very nice to be able to have a wide range of people that get to come and enjoy all these different kinds of kinks that maybe normally they wouldn't be able to do. So, yeah.
Do you mind if we talk a little bit more about DS?
Yeah, sure.
Don't get too excited.
I love it.
Calm down, please. Because it is something that is not, it's not as often talked about, or you should say, because it's not as, I don't know, people usually aren't going on Pornhub and typing in defrosting a freezer,
right?
For a you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though it can be, I mean, I'm sure it was very rewarding for all people involved, right? Yeah. And I'm sure that right now there are people who are like, shit, I don't know how to defrost a freezer. I got to be ready for this skill set just in case.
It should be a porn category.
I've never done it. So I'm like, now I'm nervous. I got to do my homework as soon as this is done. So what is the, for you, like when you're talking to someone about power exchange, because power exchange can mean so many different things.
Yeah.
It can simply mean, hey, I'm the one doing the spanking, you know? But for you, it sounds like it's much more mental, spiritual, perhaps.
Yeah.
What is it that appeals to you about it? What is the, and why do you think it's not as, why do you think there aren't, I mean, I don't know, I haven't checked, but I'm assuming there aren't many Pornhub videos of, you know, refilling the coffee or something like
right.
that, you know?
I know.
But yet at the same time, when I describe my relationship to someone, I have friends who are vanilla who are like, oh my God, I wish I could find someone to give me a massage once a week, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious of why there's that disconnect, and just feel free to just rant as much as you want about it. I'm curious about your general thoughts on it.
I mean, I feel like it's, to me, it seems like the reason it's so often overlooked is because it's just not as sexy, you know, looking, you know? So it's because most of the time it's like you're looking for visual things. It just, it doesn't feel as sexy looking. And it's such a, it's so subtle is which is what I love about power exchange, but it's subtle. It's like the subtle energy of power that's happening when somebody is like defrosting the freezer and downstairs away from me, but like coming over occasionally to like top off my wine, you know, it's really subtle. And I enjoy that subtle feeling, that subtle energy, but of course that's hard to see. And it's hard to convey that sense of like connection that's happening between the two folks, the sense of peace that's happening, you know, the sense of direction and being in charge, the tension, you know, this is difficult to convey, but I love how it feels in my body and things like that. I think that that's why I have joined the MS community, is because of the fact that they love power exchange. And I mean, that is what they want to talk about all the time and focus on, and that it is a very spiritual thing for most folks in that dynamic. And I do find it to be very spiritual for me as well. The idea of being responsible for the relationship gives me a sense of purpose and makes me feel like I am looking to better myself so that I can better lead in a relationship. So there's a sense of like trying to make myself better, which I always love, and trying to learn more about myself, get deeper self-awareness. And then I also love the idea on the other side of the slash of like transparency and wanting to you know, do your best or learn more about yourself so that you can be as transparent with your master as possible, and that kind of energy as well. So I think that it feels very spiritual to me, which is, and I am a very spiritual person, so it very seamlessly aligns with, you know, meditating and clearing your mind and grounding yourself and all of that. And so, for me, I just feel like it feels like something that has the most fun happening, really, because I am, I guess, a very cerebral person as well. But I feel like, you know, when I see somebody who is serving well and doing a good job and is focused on what they're doing and really making my life easier, this truly is a turn on for me. It truly feels like, okay, this person is here to participate and do their part to really help the power feel sexy, you know?
What about protocols? Because I've noticed, like, I remember before I met my wife, I was in a purely DS, there was no kink play involved, it was purely DS, service-oriented relationship with someone, and it, heavy protocols, speaking in third person, long list of things. And when I remember when I told my wife that, she was like, God damn, that sounds like so much goddamn work. You know what I mean? She, right. For her, that was like, not, we do have protocols, but they're not like heavy protocol type of thing.
Yeah.
Some people really get off on that, right? Some people really enjoy heavy protocols, and some people are like, no, the point is to make everything easier. This sounds like it's more work. Or
yeah.
What is that for you? Or is it sometimes you're in the mood, sometimes you're not in the mood for heavy protocols. And what does it look like for you?
Yeah, I enjoy protocol as well. But I probably, I mean, just guessing, but I probably land in a similar vein as your wife. You know, I definitely wouldn't want to do like third person or the person having to always say you, or when they write you, they have to, you know, capitalize it. Like, you know, some things I feel like, yeah, this is more work than it needs to be. And it feels like I'm losing connection. Sometimes too much protocol makes me lose connection. And it feels like now It just feels like an act and a show, and I'm not actually connecting. But I do enjoy protocol that feels connective, I guess. So that's the foundation. If a protocol feels connective, then I like it. And so it may be, I don't know, it may be sometimes like when I come home, if they're hanging out for spending the night at my place or something like that, they may have a beer ready for me, take off my shoes, hang up my jacket. And that feels lovely. That feels connective. It feels like being taken care of when I walk into the space. And that is something that makes me happy. So that would be something that I would do. Or, you know, running a bath for me. Or, you know, yeah, a lot of it could be things that feel like being cared for, or being seen, or thought of. And that protocols that do that feel nice. Or I have done some like protocol events, and I'm trying to figure out more events that I can do that involve protocol, because I do enjoy it. But I've done a tea, that's what Coco does, very specifically with me, though Coco helps me with all of my events. So, but she loves tea, and so it's like very much Coco's event that I sort of help her with and all this. But I've done that, and I've done a whiskey and cigar event as well that had protocol. And I think that those protocols as well, in terms of like how you serve, feels really fun. So that isn't necessarily connection, but it feels like a fun thing, you know, just for the moment to create these sort of structures. Or maybe sometimes speech protocol can feel just like fun in the moment to do some play like that and to feel a bit more of the power, you know, if it's like we're going somewhere and they're on speech protocol, you know. So that's where I enjoy protocol. Either it's fun and something that's like, yeah, let's, you know, just have fun doing this so we can like amp up the power that we're experiencing between us, or there's connection in the protocol. It helps me to feel like, all right, we're really, you know, we're creating something that's very special and our own, you know.
I'm curious if you can, because something I've noticed, I've realized something about myself when it comes to DS, and this is. I swear I'm not trying to use you as free therapy. I swear to God, I promise it's not. So my wife and I always dated people together we've been together for, this will be our 10th wedding anniversary, almost, okay. It'll be 14 years together, almost 15 years together. Wow. Like we met 15 years ago this month.
Okay. Nice.
I'm very, very, very lucky. But we always dated people together up until about 2 years ago or so. We started dating separately a little bit. And by dating separately, I mean, I forgot how hard it is as a submissive guy, right?
Yeah.
And what I found was, and she noticed the difference, is that there were times, because I was feeling so rejected on a lot of the apps and going to events and stuff like that, that I found that my service went from, and not all the time, but there were times, especially after like a rejection or a catfish situation or whatever, when I was
right,
that the service went from, I'm doing this to please you, versus I'm doing this, please notice I'm doing this, please don't leave me, because you know what I mean? Because right, you know what I'm saying? It was almost desperation or fear based, even though I was doing the exact same thing, right? I was still doing the dishes or whatever. But she could feel that too. She could feel that there was a different tone behind it. It was not from a place of like, I'm doing this to please you. It was like, I was like, notice how I'm scrubbing this, you know, or I wasn't obviously actively doing that, but it was more out of like desperation and fear, you know, completely in my head of, you know, of the experience. Can you feel like when you're experiencing service on your end from your side, can you feel like, oh, this is coming from a place of horniness or a place of fear or a place of just wanting to please? Like, can you feel the vibe in those situations, even though it might, you know, and maybe there are instances where you enjoy a fear-based service.
Right. Yes. That could be fun. I think I do as well. I think that I definitely can tell when it comes from a place of horniness. And from a place of desperation or, you know, and when somebody isn't, maybe their heart isn't really in it and they are doing it because maybe they feel like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do, but actually maybe that's not what brings them happiness. And so it's like, oh, they maybe just need to find some other way that helps them really express their king. So I definitely have, I've experienced that also. I think in the same way that perhaps like you can walk into a room and you tell like, ooh, something is happening here, or maybe there was just a fight or whatever, you know, it's like you can feel the energy and read the body language without being consciously aware, you know.
When I first started doing service, I did it thinking, oh, this is the price that needs to be paid in order to play, right?
Right. Okay.
And then when I experienced it, like, I don't know, again, I don't like to gatekeep, but when I experienced it from someone who enjoyed service for service sake, I was, oh, wow, okay, I enjoy this aspect of it. But I was always just kind of going through the motions before, because I hadn't experienced it with someone who enjoyed service for service sake, right?
Yeah.
I had to experience that. Otherwise, I was just going through the motions because they were going through the motions, right? For them, that was the, here's what we do in order to do this, you know?
Yeah.
How do you tell the difference? Is it a vibe? Is it, because someone could be like, yeah, I'm totally into doing your dishes or whatever, you know? Because they're thinking something's coming after that.
Yeah. I think that is... I just also want to say, first of all, that I also had a real big fear of that too. I thought like, oh no, are there no real service submissives or people that really enjoy service? I felt that fear of, is it just that people are thinking like, oh, this is just like the thing to get you to the next step. And I was a bit like fearful until I found MS or found more people and all this kind of stuff that like, oh no, there's people that actually do enjoy it. I still feel a little bit of fear. I mean, I'm single and still looking. So I do sometimes still feel a bit of fear at the idea of like, you know, is it possible to really meet somebody who loves service? Because it does feel like the lifestyle is very dominated by people that are not interested in that and do want to do more the BDSM or are doing it as a entry point to do other BDSM. And so that still exists for me, that fear. So I'm still making my way through that. But I definitely feel like that's a lot of times why I do ask that question about what a service look like for you. You know, what are you hoping to gain from what are you hoping to get when you serve? And so sometimes that was what helped me. Sometimes people will say, oh, I'm looking to, you know, if I make a mistake that you would spank me and stuff. So usually people will actually answer and let me know. So I haven't found a lot of times where people are like, oh no, I'm very into service. And then I'm surprised later that it's like, oh no, they've surprised me because suddenly they had a different motive. Usually I have uncovered it through conversation and asking those kind of questions because I do have doubts myself. So a lot of times I'm like, I ask a lot of questions to make sure because I feel like, is this possible to find somebody who really just enjoys serving and finds joy in that? So, but yeah, otherwise, if I haven't asked in the beginning, when I didn't ask a lot of questions, I would just, yeah, be, it would be a vibe. It would be the fact that they are not really trying to do a good job at all, right? There was a huge difference between the person who was like defrosting the freezer and was not like asking me questions and trying to get me to, you know, engage with them, but truly was like doing a task and was just like truly doing a good job. And then versus someone who, yeah, is wanting to like keep asking questions so that I can micromanage them. They're trying to like, you know, incite me to do that or, you know, are pretending to do a good job, but not really making an effort. You can kind of see that they're hoping that I'll notice that they're making a mistake or get frustrated with them. And then that will lead to spanking, you know? So for me, I can definitely tell the difference in that it's if somebody's really just focused, doing their work, trying to do a good job versus someone who's like, really, you know, you could see that they're like vaguely working. They're sort of looking around. They're really not there for the service, you know.
Careful what you wish for, because for me, the punishment is the fact that I made the mistake, right? Like, yeah. If I were to be punished in the sexy traditional way or something like that, I'd be depressed for days. You know, it would have the opposite effect. Like, I'd always associate spanking with sadness or something. Right, you know what right. I mean? Like just knowing I fucked up is punishment enough. Thank you very much. I do not need to, you know.
Yeah. I've definitely experienced both sides of service at the tea as well. Like when I've done like the protocol tea, I've definitely had folks that come to the tea who are like, yes, I want to serve, obviously. And they filled out the application and did all the thing and did the training. And then, yeah, when they arrive, it's clear that what they wanted was like the excitement of maybe somebody humiliating them or teasing them or something. And so you could see that they're not doing a good job. And then there are people, so I might tell them to do something, but you know, they're like very hesitant and very unsure. And then some other folks I know, it's like more and more I begin to lean on them because I know if I tell them to do something, they're going to go and do it quickly. And you know, like they're moving at my pace. And then there's people that are like clearly moving slower because they just aren't actually interested. So I feel like that also is it's very indicative, you know?
Yeah. And it's tough to blame them for it, right? Because they may not know, you know?
Exactly. Yep.
And that's the tricky part because some people just, they don't know, or maybe that's all they know, you know?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I know it when I see it type of situation sometimes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they might've thought that it would be interesting and fun, but it's like, oh no, this is not what I meant, you know? So yeah.
Right. When it comes to DS and making decisions inside, like how do you imagine is your, do you want to be like the person is fairly autonomous but defers to you, or is it a every little detail you want to hash out? Like, what does that look like for you? Like there, and also like I know in my experience, like there are things that I'm just not good at. Right, there are things I'm not folding a fitted sheet.
Yeah,
I've tried so many. I've watched so many videos. Yeah.
That is a tough one.
But it's just, it's not, I'm not, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's a hard limit.
Yeah.
But like, what does that look like to you? Like, do you have in your mind or maybe in your experiences, do you like to have all the minor details picked out in your, you know, ahead of time, or do you want the person to have an initiative?
I definitely want somebody to ask questions if they don't understand something. I do hate when I feel like, oh, I've said a bunch of words and then the person's like, okay, great. And then they go and do everything wrong. And I feel like, oh man, I just feel like it's hard to know that part where it's like, am I saying too many things and they can't understand or did they think they understood? So I definitely would like people to ask questions if they're like, let me just clarify what you're saying or something like that. But yeah, I definitely like prefer somebody who is autonomous. I find that the last person who served me was a woman that was mass presenting, and she was really efficient. A lot of the things she did for me was like planning out. I was taking a trip to DC and she found the tolls and the plan of how to go. And I also was looking for a woodworking class, and she found a few options that were near me and the price level and, you know, within my budget and all that kind of stuff. So that's more what I prefer. Someone who I can give you something to do and you go and do it. And then give me the results. Or even if it's like, oh, let's go out to dinner, I am not necessarily interested in being the one who picks where we go. I would, you know, want you to send me maybe three options that are places that, you know, I would love, and I just would choose, you know. So that is more where I lean toward, which I think is also why I enjoy doing the book Question and Answers by Raven Caldera, because of the fact that in that book, they talk about the types of, like, what kind of dominant you are. You're either a celebrity dominant or you're, I think they mostly say master, but a celebrity master or a micromanaging master or, you know, a parental, like, it gives you different categories. And I feel like I probably lean a bit more celebrity, which is where if we're at the restaurant, I don't want to order for my submissive. I actually would want them to know what I want and order for me and, you know, have it ready and waiting for me, like that kind of thing. So that definitely lends itself more to somebody who is proactive and is like paying attention and knows what I like and my favorite things and, you know, can help choose things that are like, I know you'll love this. Here are some options, you know? So that's more my style, but there's obviously many. So.
Making your life easier in. I'm curious about how, because I had a discussion recently about aspects of the kink community and race, specifically the terms master and slave.
Yeah.
I'm curious your thoughts on it. I've heard you use the phrase master. I have friends who think it should be completely removed from the kink scene, the kink community. It shouldn't be referred to as, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it? Is it a reclaiming? Is it a just, hey, look, this is how it's used in the scene, whatever it is, what it is.
Yeah.
What is that for you?
So I have no problem with master. I don't often use slave. So usually I still say submissive for the S side, but, for master, I don't have a problem with, because there are, you know, lots of definitions of that word. You know, there's also, you know, sort of like master apprentice, you know? So I don't connect it to U.S. Chattel slavery. And so I will think of it in lots of different ways that apply for the word master. But I don't use slave. So sometimes I am, you know, I think I've mostly just used submissive. I'm trying to think if there's any time. I have sometimes used property, but again, that to me is more because of the sort of deep power exchange that's happening. And I can feel, and I do want to own somebody, you know, I do want to like own them, body, mind, spirit, all that kind of stuff. So that I'm okay with, because that's truly like a feeling from within me. It's not that I'm using the words because of any, you know, representation in society. I'm looking to own somebody and I want them to want to be owned by me. And so that I'm also okay with, because I'm using the definitions of the words as they are, and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely find that, you know, it's not always comfortable when it's just master slave, you know, I don't love that. But I also get that, yeah, there are many Black folks that do feel like it is a reclaiming, or do feel like it is a, you know, it's part of what they feel, that's what they're doing. Like, you know, there's a special energy that's happening and they do want to, you know, serve their master in that way and things like that. So I think, and I guess for me, a part of it as well is that I have obviously encountered people where there's not a lot of, you know, like Black male submissives. So that's already, or even like BIPOC submissives, because of just cultural things, I'm sure. And so a lot of times I am with a, like a white male slave, if I am with somebody of that, like that, or I may be with a female submissive, but it's still maybe leans more white. So I do feel like, yeah, I'm aware that there's so much race that is happening anyway. I have gotten messages where people are like, oh, I just want to serve a black woman, or are, you know, like, you know, ebony goddess and all this sort of stuff that just sort of naturally just happens. So I'm probably more conscious of it, where I think if it was two black folks, and so the MS relationships that I've seen where they do sometimes use master slave, it's two black folks. And so I feel like, yeah, there's a different energy happening when they're using the term, as opposed to if I am with a, you know, a white submissive and I'm, you know, doing that, it feels like, you know, there's so much more that's added on to it, you know? So.
I've also noticed, submissives sometimes will describe themselves sort of like there's a hierarchy of,
yeah, yeah, of,
right? Like a bottom is,
yes,
is down here, right? Mm-hmm. Above a bottom, you have a submissive. Above a submissive, you have a slave, right?
Yes. I've
seen people describe themselves in that way, like, oh, I'm not a submissive, I'm a slave, or I'm not a bottom, I'm a submissive, you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, how would these people who feel like they need to, because sometimes these things can be helpful in describing things, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes someone would consider a submissive a bottom, right? Or whatever, in their minds, this is how they,
yeah.
Like, so I'm wondering, I guess I don't know enough people who describe this in a way that they feel like they need to have a third descriptor above submissive, right?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that question, you know.
Maybe
ranking, maybe it's like black belts, you know,
yes,
or
exactly.
Like I'm a double submissive or, yes. Or something like that.
That would be great. Actually, that would be fun. Yeah.
You'd have to get ranked and I'm worried of where I'd land.
Yeah.
So I do find that very interesting. It's also sort of like, you mentioned also that about male submissives that you've encountered mostly been white. Is that do you think that is because of I'm sure there's a numerous things about it. I know for me, it was hard at first. I grew up in a very rural community, farm kid.
Right.
Masculinity was this one specific thing, right?
Yeah.
Also relationship to women was a very specific thing. That's very different of how, you know, is that what it is? Do you think it's what do you think's behind that? Is it the masculine thing that, like, oh, it's not, yeah, masculine to be submissive? Or
I think so. I think that there is, which is why I said, yeah, I think it's a cultural thing. I think that, you know, if you are, you know, in the Hispanic community, it'll be because there's a lot of machismo. And, or if you are in the black community, there's a very certain and specific definitions of what a man is or what masculinity is. And so it can be difficult to break free of that and feel respected. You know, I mean, I know that Chucky, who is a black submissive, who's pretty well known in the lifestyle and teaches and stuff. I mean, you know, he often mentions how, yeah, when he started, he would be the only black submissive in the room. And still sometimes it's like, oh, I'm basically the only black submissive. And so, yeah, I think it is just people are still feeling like to be a male submissive means that you're weak and you're not a man, which I think is why I do appreciate the knight archetype, as it does help some folks to feel like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying to me. And it does not mean that I'm not a man. It means that I'm using my masculinity to protect and to serve and to, you know, to help. And so there's a nicer way to look at it. But yeah, I think it is, yeah, mostly a cultural situation. I think it just will take a while, or maybe it'll never happen, I don't know, before people feel like, yes, I can be okay with this and not feel that I'm weak, you know?
Well, there's also the depiction in porn, of course,
right,
the worthless, yeah, worm stereotype,
yeah,
which I never could identify with. I,
yeah,
could never, like, yeah. In fact, you know, the people who, and I've described this before, the male submissives I know who are really into humiliation are also tend to go on the higher class level.
Mm-hmm.
Because for them, humiliation is a break from the norm, as opposed to if you grew up poor, Right. You know, being valued is the thing. I noticed that about myself. I'm like, oh, I think poverty is the reason why I'm not into humiliation. You know, and so it's a working theory, and so far it's worked out pretty well for me as far as like when I've identified like, oh yeah, class has something to do here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This has been really enjoyable, and I'm really excited to go to my first event. I think the game night might be the one. If I can play some Ticket to Ride with my wife first beforehand, so she can kind of get used to the idea of. No, she's not that bad.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to go to one of your events in person, and kudos for creating a space, for running a space like this. I mean, it's a lot of work, and so you know, I'm glad you enjoy it because I know so many people who do not last very long when doing this, and you know, it seems like you've got a smile on your face, so that's a good sign. So
I do enjoy it. I feel like it is nice to be able to feel like I do find it a service to the community, and I do, which I enjoy doing. I do also like to surf, and I do feel like it feels nice to be able to do something where I'm helping people to come together and helping people to meet or helping people to feel like there's a safe space for them, regardless of their gender. And I also enjoy that a lot of my events do focus on power exchange, which feels nice as that's, you know, just something that I love, as well. I think I also had wanted to actually mention when we were talking about the slave moniker and things like that, actually, what popped into my head is that I think that I also do the ranking system in terms of like, oh, a submissive and a slave is a deeper level of submissive. And so sometimes when speaking to somebody, I will like speak to them using the word slave so that we can understand what we mean. But then like when it's actually the dynamic, I will say submissive, but it's like when defining, when speaking or something like that. And then I also appreciate the use of the word slave heart, because I do feel like, that also helps to define like, all right, what I'm talking about in terms of someone who values this deep level of submission and service, has a slave heart and things like that. And I think another thing that I think of with the use of the word slave too, is the fact that obviously sometimes I'm okay with the use of it is because I know that what was actually happening in US history, you know, it was not like the Black folks that were enslaved wanted to serve, you know? So it actually was not, it actually wasn't slavery in the way that MS does slavery. Like it was not like, oh wow, these Black folks have a slave heart and that's why they're, you know, serving. It was, so it's, you know, it's almost like the MS that's happening is meant to be this like beautiful, deep connection. And that is very different from actually what, you know, was happening in US history. So it's sort of like there, it really is two different things when you look at it, you know, so.
And also because people will sometimes refer to MS as freeing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a
so,
very
yeah, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite the opposite. Well, this has been, it's a good sign when things keep coming up in conversation ask you before we go. So this is a good thing. I want to, you know, you also mentioned, cause I have friends of every background you can imagine. And there is a sensitivity when someone's race is fetishized.
Mm-hmm.
Sensitivity is the wrong word. You know, there are some people who are like, you know what? I can understand. I have a friend who has a love hate relationship with an Asian, with being Asian and having Asian fetishes out there.
Uh-huh.
In some aspects, she enjoys aspects of it, and other aspects, but it's just like, just as in the DS, it's the tone.
Yeah.
Do you give people the benefit of the doubt if someone comes and says Ebony Goddess or something like that, or is that an automatically look, get out of here, or? Because as far as they know, they might think you want to be referred. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously they should ask first.
Yes, indeed.
But how do you deal with that? Because I perfectly understand why they'd be like, okay, bye, and I'm not even going to bother with this, right?
Yeah.
Or
I think that I am of the ilk that does just not bother. I will right. not respond and things like that, or any of the wanting to, you know, oh, you know, I'm a white, you know, worm that you can take your anger out on or something like that. Like, yeah, I just don't bother, because on my profile, there is nothing that indicates any kind of race play and stuff. So there's that. The person obviously probably isn't reading. And then, yeah, I think the same way that I started the event so that people can like meet each other as human beings first and then could, you know, do other kinds of play, is the same way that, yeah, I just would want somebody to meet me as a human being. And I feel like, yeah, I think I would also equally be like, what's happening if somebody came up to me at a bar and was like, hey, Ebony Goddess, or, you know, right. I'm a white person for you to spit on. It would feel like, what is happening? Like, I'm just drinking a beer and like, you need to calm down, you know?
And it's probably also a sign that that it's their kink that right. they're more focused on.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, this is a clear case of ask first.
Yes.
Before,
yes, I think yeah. so. I think it just, it would help if you just are, you know, you start err on the side of caution and err on the side of like, yeah. okay, I'm just going to speak to the person normally. And then if it's like, oh, wow, I do like it and we agree and things, then sure, I feel like, yes, you know, but it's like, might as well just lean to.
What are your pronouns? What is your, how do you like to be addressed? You know, yeah. Those are the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad this is, we had some scheduling up, but both of our schedules were, you know, all over the place. And I'm glad we finally yes. made this happen. And I'm glad Coco was not a liar.
Yeah.
I'm so glad she's in my brain. I've known her longer than I've known my wife. And in my brain, she's still like, yep. Coco knows how to pick them. That's pretty good. That's so, yeah.
Yes. Good job, Coco. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. This was really great too. I'm really glad that I got to chat with you. It was a great conversation. So